Gresham Fauria on WEEI.
Final hour, Gresham Fauria, and then we are on our way to Detroit. Now we got some of the Twitchers. Chris 1955 in the old Twitch chat. I don't think they're getting that game in Cleveland in. How can use another day of rest? Oh, boy. Now they're just piling on. They're trying to
they
get you
to.
They
just need to get through five.
They're
That's
trying
all they need to do.
Hey. What are you doing? Let's not
what?
Get through five.
Get through five. Innings, five. Then call the game. That's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, get through five.
Well, they got to get
it
going.
An official game.
The problem, no, I get that, but the problem is it's going to be rainy and go start some bitch.
Just get through five.
Sure.
I mean, I think the fear is they may just call it before it starts. The key is to at least start it, because once they start it, they're pretty much committed to finishing it and getting those five innings.
Well, and then the person who might get really screwed tonight is Keith, because he's supposed to do pregame. So if they start pregame and then they're like, you know, oh, bully, this might get rained out, or we got to call it or alter it or whatever, then the next thing you know, it's an hour of pregame, and then they bang out the game, and then it's the Rich Keefe experience until 10, and the guy to come in and start an hour early.
Not
at
least
to be confused
call
it early
with the,
enough
with the,
so
with,
Keefe can do 6 to 10.
With the Fenway experience, that sucks, and the Keefe experience, which is awesome.
Very much so. Now, the Fenway experience with Keefe.
Ooh, now I'm confused.
Now, that would be something.
I want to mock it, yet I want to laugh.
No, he...
Not really sure what to do.
He was calling games last year. Why mock? Who are you, Babu Bob? Mocking?
Anything with Fenway and experience is mockable.
Yeah, I can.
That's why.
I can.
But then you add Keith, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, then it's a little different. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, it is Miami and Boston game 2 of the series between these two teams. And we know that the Celtics won pretty comfortably by 20. It wasn't exactly a blowout or anything like that. But one of the things that you and I did not really do the deep dive into was how none of the Celtics were nominated for an individual award. Now, if I have this correct, don't they go top three for these awards? So there's the voting, and then it's the top three are the ones that are the candidates for, like, Defensive Player of the Year, MVP, all. I think that's how that works.
Yeah, so right now, so the finalists, so the top three finalists in each award
category.
Has been, in each category,
there we go.
Released Most Valuable Player, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved Player, Sixth Man of the Year, Clutch Player of the Year, and surprise, I'm not sure how they quantify that, but that's fine, and then Coach of the Year.
So none of the Celtics were in the top three for any of those.
None of them were finalists on any of the categories, and I was actually kind of surprised, to be honest with you.
Thought Tatum would be top three for MVP?
I felt like he would be moved out of that, but defensive player, you know, I know like a lot, mostly the attention when it comes to defensive awards usually goes to a big man, but even though Marcus Smart won the award, Sixth Man of the Year award, he had a guy that won that also, but he never won a championship. Coach of the Year is, I think, the biggest snub
mm-hmm.
out of all of them based on where Joe Mazzulla came from. And I think he's a victim of his own circumstances because everyone believes, and rightfully so for the most part, that he has the most talented team in the NBA. So they're not giving him credit for anything. They're saying your roster is so good, is so awesome, that you know what? You really don't need to do much heavy lifting. So we're not going to acknowledge you for that.
Now, there were some Celtics like Kristaps Porzingis who didn't hit that 65 games to where you're not eligible for awards. Because I know for those wondering about defense, Jrue Holiday ended up, I think it was 68 games during the regular season for him. But regardless, Joe Mazzulla was asked today. Our guy Terp was over an hour back, I guess. And Joe Mazzulla was asked about none of the Celtics being nominated for an individual award. Now, I'm very curious as to how people are going to take this, because normally these coaches almost always engage in defending the player, right? Oh, I can't believe Tatum wasn't a finalist for MVP. I can't believe this guy wasn't a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. Because, Christian, with the way they are in the NBA, you would think that the coach would almost have to stand up for the player. Not so fast with Joe Mazzulla.
Great thing about this team is I think from day one, We've appreciated the individual awards that we've gotten from, you know, the Player of the Month, Staff of the Month, and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I think one of the biggest strengths of this team is they haven't had that agenda. And so none of the guys have brought it up, and I don't think it's important at all because we're all focused on what we need to do as a team.
It feels like Joe Mazzulla has done the impossible. In a team sport where there is still an individual element, Joe Mazzulla seems to have taken that kind of individual element out of this particular basketball team in trying to win a championship. And not that other coaches in years past were like, yeah, Tatum should be the MVP, but we know that there was, especially for Tatum in particular, kind of the lobbying to be a first-team All-NBA guy. Kind of the lobbying to, hey, I'm in the MVP club type deal. And now, while Tatum isn't an MVP, but his hand is stamped, everybody, hey, he's a first-team All-NBA guy. We kind of know that going into the year as long as he doesn't screw it up type thing. You needed a little bit of the verbiage to sort of go with it to pump him up.
He loves this stuff. This is just fuel.
And Mazzulla's going the other way and being like, yep, there's no individual awards here. I love it.
No, I see.
Most coaches would never say that with a superstar at the level of Jason Tatum.
Yeah, but he's also playing the disrespect card. Like, this is fuel for him. He gets to say, you won more games than anybody. You're the best team in the NBA, and not one of you made the top three in any of these categories, and not even me, not any of us. They still don't respect you. They still think you can't do it. Like, this is why he likes the whole, you know, he likes the late game, like, difficult situations.
But doesn't that kind of contradict some of what we heard from the very beginning of the year from Mazzulla, which was trying to eliminate a lot of that kind of individualism because there was the talk of sacrifice. Everybody across the board has to sacrifice a little bit for the greater goal to be achieved.
To me, this is his Philadelphia parade. Philadelphia Eagles parade. This is what he's doing. If you had cameras in there, he would be up at the front and saying, you want to hear who the MVP is? Let's see who the top three MVPs are. You know, he goes through the list. Hey, you want to talk about defensive players? He's going to point to Derek White. He's going to point to Drew Holiday. Hey, you want to talk about sixth man of the year? I mean, I don't know if they really have one. Al Horford. Yeah, you know what? Just, you'll be our sixth man of the year.
Oh, Sam Hauser. Pump up your guy. Okay, like
Mazzulla. Coach of the year? I mean, he can't really talk about himself, but the message will be sent. They don't think on one hand, sure, like, the team wins. I get it. But this is an individual sport in a lot of regards. And then
they cater to the superstars in the NBA, so even the coaches.
How can
it'll be a good game. They're a good team. And we played them earlier this year. You know, I know, you know, everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games. So we'll see.
And that's not even it. They were still good, weren't they? They were just old.
Yeah, that's tame from Brady.
Yeah.
But you made an interesting analogy, and it sparked some thought as you were kind of going through it all. This is his Philadelphia parade.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting because, in a weird way, it runs against a lot of what we heard all year long, which was team, 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 team. But it would be kind of that, like, wacko coach stroke of genius if he took that and said, yeah, we're all about team, but we all got disrespected.
Yes.
So it's either Joe Mazzulla said, if we do it this way, we'll win at a high level and the awards don't matter. Or does Joe flip it around and be like, no, Jedi mind trick. We've all been disrespected, so now we all need to stick it to everybody. It's a bold strategy,
you,
but you know what?
You're on it. This is why he's like, yes.
I feel like you're on
because
it.
Because you know the one thing that they're going to have to deal with is complacency. The one thing they're going to have to deal with is, like, you know, trying to keep their edge, right, because they're really good. So the only way is to manufacture. You got to manufacture that chip on your shoulder. And I would say it's set up perfectly for him. It is set up perfectly for him.
There's a lot of things going the Celtics way right now.
It's like, now just manage it. Like, even like the first game of the series with the Heat, like, playing dirty and checking them and challenging them. And then that Eric Spoelstra, I just saw more news about him saying, well, you know, that's just, it's always a tough, hard-fought physical game whenever we play against each other.
How does Mazzulla break through to become a consistent Coach of the Year candidate? Can he? Like, is that award just rigged so that it really is the you did the most with the least award? Or you brought a team to the playoffs out of nowhere?
Yeah, so your top are what? Chris Finch, Timberwolves, the Thunder, Jamal Mosley for the Magic. I would say Mike Malone of the Denver Nuggets. I mean, he's got one All-Star on that team. One that made the All-Star in 2024. And you could say, well, they had the best player in the NBA. Well, I don't know. Seems like the Lakers have two really good players. One's a Hall of Famer, considered the best debatable. Mm. So it is weird the way they – I would say even most improved player. Who would you think would be the most improved player on the Celtics?
Honestly, probably Hauser.
I was going to say Derek White. I would say he elevated his game to a whole nother level if you're really going to X's and O it, if you're really going to critique it.
Hey, he was
really
a first-round pick, though.
Derek White?
Like, it was in
him. I know,
him.
But he was, like, he was, you know, nobody in San Antonio. He was a backup when he came here. I don't know.
He was 29th overall. It was late first, but still, like, he was a first rounder. Sam Hauser was a, you know, guy who walked in from a cornfield, and they said, oh, you can shoot threes. Can you play D? Good enough. We'll get you in there. And guys like Fourier fall in love with him. Draft coverage on WEEI, which is where Fourier and I are headed tomorrow to Detroit. Brought to you by McFarland Energy, Greater Boston, and Cape Cod's choice for home heating, oil delivery, and expert HVAC product and services at McFarlandEnergy.com. Buy Chock Full of Nuts Coffee and buy McCormick Spices. One more pair of tickets for you to see the Red Sox take on the Cubs on Saturday. That is coming up.
Remember, you can listen to WEEI on your smart speaker.
Just say, play 93.7 WEEI.
Now, more of Gresh and Fourier on WEEI.
All right, so a couple of things on the draft here at 125. And in 5 minutes, we have another pair of Red Sox tickets to give away. Our final pair of the day on Two for Tuesday. So I'm looking at a thing from NFL Live, or NFL Network, sorry, where they're doing a show called The Insiders. They got rap sheet. If the NFL draft was today, the Commanders and Patriots would make their picks rather than trade. But then it says 2 days to go. Right underneath of it on the timeline is something from Pro Football Talk for you. And of course, I click on it and it says page not found. But it says here, so the link is dead. However, it says report. Raiders reached out to the Commanders about trading for the number 2 overall pick. You think the Raiders are serious?
No.
I don't either.
And do you think that the Commanders are even willing to entertain it? No.
No. That no. I agree.
No, that's the thing. So they have a better chance of getting number 3. If you're trying to get the number 2 pick, you want Jaden Daniels.
That's exactly right. Unlike New England, who will just wait for whomever falls to them and then say, well, this is the guy we loved, the Raiders are like, yeah, we like Jaden Daniels.
Everything about Jaden Daniels is such a Cliff Kingsbury offensive coordinator with the Washington Commanders. That's the type of player that most people would kind of consider a modern quarterback.
Yep.
That's the type of guy that he coaches. That's the type of he's going to install an offense that Jaden Daniels is used to, just like he had with Caleb Williams. And before that, it was Baker Mayfield at one point in time. And so the dude has been around and he knows what he's doing.
And it feels like for the Raiders, who are sitting there at 13, they're behind Minnesota. They're behind Denver. Now, I don't think Denver is going to stop at Zach Wilson. And let's just stop down real quick. Zach Wilson traded from the Jets to the Broncos. I'm a little surprised he ended up with the Broncos.
I'm not surprised that he ended up somewhere. I'm surprised that there was like an actual market. Like somebody traded something. There was an exchange. And the Jets are – and it's so bad that the Jets are actually paying the Broncos part of his salary.
That's right. So basically the Broncos and the Jets are going to split – a little more than $5 million guaranteed. And I do believe it was a pick swap of a 6 for a 7.
Yep.
So it wasn't even really, hey, we trade you this pick for this guy. It was, well, we'll just kind of swap positions. You can move up a little bit. But those are the kinds of deals that are becoming more common nowadays in the NFL, where if you're like New England and you have pick number 34, maybe you end up getting someone's fourth round pick, but you get a player in return or something of that nature.
Yeah, and even just the Zach Wilson situation is that he's 24 years old. Okay, he obviously came out of college too early. He wasn't ready for the spotlight. He had different coordinators, different situations, wasn't ready to be a pro, but he's 24 years old. He has 3 years of NFL experience. I mean, in some way, that's got to be appealing to you, unless you just, hey, it, like if I'm Sean Payton, don't worry, I can fix you. There's a diamond in there somewhere. I'm just gonna polish it up a little bit. But that guy's an athlete. That guy's a diamond. You guys just can't see it.
Well, what he also did was maybe get his backup quarterback at a little over $2 million, which nowadays in the NFL, for anybody with experience, is...
Now, is he the backup to Jarrett Stidham or the next guy? Because Jarrett Stidham's on that roster, too.
Yeah, it's Stidham and Ben DiNucci.
Yeah, that was the name I was trying to pull. Yeah, they're going to get another one. There's no doubt. Are they taking him at 12, though, or are they going to wait in the... You know, maybe come back around in the second round, which they don't have. See, everybody's talking about Denver moving up to get a quarterback. I wonder if they're going back. They don't have a second round pick. If they land on Bo Nix, they could slide down in the first round or even in the high second round and be able to jump in and get him if they really want to.
Bo Nix would be the same age as Zach Wilson. I think he's actually going to be older.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Which
six
is
years in college,
which is really kind of wild when you think about it.
There's something that just, I don't know where you're going right now, but I wanted to bring this up because I thought it was kind of made me chuckle a little bit. Like, what does it tell you when you're starting to hear different analysts and scouts or people in the business reference a prospect's overall record? Now, when I say overall, I mean his eighth grade record, that when he played in eighth grade, his high school record.
Oh, you mean like we're going all the way back to like the Pee Wee Fields?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Tell me, like, it is funny because J.J. McCarthy is getting credited for just being this, you know, this unbelievable winner. Like, one of the assets that you can't identify that you haven't been paying attention to is that no matter what was, he's a winner. This guy wins wherever he goes. So you should look at him differently as opposed to some of these other guys. Okay, who haven't won when they were at eighth grade?
Well, and we'll give you those numbers in a moment. But first.
What is it?
It's a twofer Tuesday. Twofer Tuesday.
Let's roll.
Caller 9 to the contest line. 617-931-0937. A pair of tickets to see the Red Sox and the Cubs on Saturday. Caller 9, contest line, 617-931-0937. Sox Cubs Saturday. You can get a pair right now if you're caller 9. Good luck. All right, so J.J. McCarthy, I'm assuming that he's a big winner.
He's a savant. He's really like a prodigy when you think he's Tiger Woods. In eighth grade, did you know he was offered a full scholarship from Iowa State?
For what?
For football.
Oh, my God.
It's so stupid.
What in the name of Matt Campbell's going on?
And what is, in ninth grade, what does varsity redshirt mean? If you're in ninth grade, you're a freshman in high school, and somebody decides to list one of your accomplishments to be varsity redshirt.
Pure guess on my part.
What does that even mean?
No, but this is I am totally guessing here. In Western Pennsylvania, where I grew up, you had junior high school and then high school. So if you were a ninth grader that got pulled up to the varsity, let's say, and they didn't play you very much. That was the whole, they would say, oh, it's like that. So I think it is delineation between a school district with a junior and a senior high, and therefore you're playing on one team versus the other, I think.
I think it's a slick way of saying we pulled him up, but we didn't play him.
I kind of think so,
yeah. Red shirt.
Well, and again,
it's like he was good enough to play, but they had to redshirt him.
That's a way to dress it up a little bit, yeah. You're protecting the integrity of the record you're about to roll out by saying that he was a varsity redshirt.
10th grade, 13-1, won a state championship with a broken thumb on his throwing hand. Tough guy. Uh-oh. 11th grade, 13-1, but he lost the state championship. That's where the one loss came from.
It's not open heart surgery.
12th grade, Only 8-0. But again, I'm assuming that was the COVID year, but they played less games, won the national championship. So he won won a state championship, lost a national championship. Won a state championship, lost a state championship, and won a national championship.
How that's they decided, weird. I have what, no because idea. USA Today said that they were the
team, I guess. Yeah, it's a COVID year. So
where's modern
year,
day?
I know, right? In Orange County.
I knew you got that.
I knew that one. Okay, freshman year, Michigan. Didn't start, didn't play. But then sophomore year, 12-1 as a starter. And then as a junior, 15-0. And oh, by the way, his head coach finally got his tattoo with the big M and the 15-0.
He
looks
did,
janky.
Yes.
So a combined record of 61-3 as a starter. Should you take that into account? Or does it even mean anything whatsoever?
It is a minor detail for me if I were doing the evaluation.
So you've won everywhere you've been.
Right. And here's
the
thing.
That was John Henry.
What was Drake May's record?
Pretty good, too.
Yeah, what was Caleb Williams' record? Overall, pretty good.
Pretty good.
He took it on the chin this past year at USC. But
yeah,
he's
but
still
in high school,
be-
he's pretty good. We're talking like these are the number one. Yeah. Also, all these guys are like top five recruits in the nation.
And it would almost alarm me more if, or maybe I would give more credit towards a guy who went to a school that wasn't great, but he was a part of the build. Like when he got there, we were a 6-win team. Then we became a 9-win team. Excuse me. Then we had 2 years where we won at a really high level because of this guy and this QB. You know what I mean? Versus the, he's a really good guy who got a college scholarship and is now going to the NFL and won a bunch of games. Well, I would expect that. I don't know if we're going to – I bet if we go back on all the quarterbacks that are drafted, we might find maybe one where the record was kind of Mets. But otherwise, I would think they all probably won a lot of games.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know who also won a lot of games in high school? That would be a Mac Jones.
True.
Trevor Lawrence. You hear about Trevor Lawrence, high school, and
Trey
never
Lance
missed a start.
Trey Lance won a ton in college.
All these guys. And even if you go to just your overall college record, let's just look at that. Kellen Moore at Boise State.
Oh, my God. He lost like four games.
He lost three.
Three.
He was 50-3. Mm-hmm. Colt McCoy, University of Texas.
I think he lost two games.
45-8, a little bit more.
He had an extra year in there. Yeah. I thought he was only a two.
And then Andy Dalton. I'm just going to give you the answer.
Oh, at TCU?
At TCU.
Maybe he lost like eight.
Okay, he lost seven.
Okay.
So Andy Dalton, listen, it's a good pro. I don't care what anyone says. The guy started in the league. He's had a super long career.
Isn't he still in the league?
I think he is. Some sort of backup somewhere.
Was he Carolina's backup or something like that last year or whatever?
It stood out to me only for the reason that I just thought it was humorous. It's like, hey, what's going to make my guy more relevant than the last guy? Like Michael Penix Jr. has the unbelievable set of circumstances, the resiliency that he is – you know, that he has acquired since he's been hurt so many times, leaving schools. Like there's something there. It's hard to shake that guy. He can take anything. There's the JJ McCarthy with all the success and all the winning. There's the Drake May of like, listen, if you want to like a strong gene pool, you want to make sure your kids get some sort of like athletic scholarship. Okay. Go to that family tree. Every single one of the sons and parents are all studs, all of them.
I think there are a lot of guys who are in the NFL who know how to win. And I think maybe Fourier, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, there would have been the importance put on, hey, this guy comes from a winning program. He understands the winning culture, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if that sticks to players anymore. If you're a really good offensive lineman, it doesn't matter how many games you won. You know what I mean? They're more interested in your, sack percentage than you are.
Yeah, they'll never use that as a trait.
Right.
Hey, because there's a bunch of kids from IMG and all these high schools in California and Texas, and they've never lost.
Never. And so I think in terms of the winning, you definitely apply it more to the quarterback. But I think it's much more of here's how winning correlates to the next level. Are you making winning plays in crucial situations? A running back, right? No one cares they block until it's a big third down in the Super Bowl. And then I want to know my guy's going to stick his face mask in someone's chest plate. So it's one of those things that I think for some on the outside, who cares? It's not a big deal. No, those are the kinds of details that matter. Are you making the big catch as a wide receiver and running big-time routes late in games? Can quarterbacks deliver the ball with some pressure? You know, can offensive linemen deal with blitzes? If you're a center, can you read the defense? There's so much more that you can look at on film of are guys making winning plays versus tying it into did they win the game? So I think to your point, like I can evaluate Christian Fourier at Colorado and you win a game, you know, 20-10, but it, you know, in the final drive to win it, you're mowing people down left and right. Those are important plays. To me, those are winning plays. So I think there is a difference between the whole winning the game and making winning plays. And I think for a lot of scouts, it's, oh, they won the game? Yeah. But look at this play this guy made on 3rd and 4 against this player in this situation. That's the kind of stuff we're looking for out of our guys. Rah, let's go get them type thing. You know, I know I kind of rallied it around there a little bit, but
you landed it.
But
though.
It really is true. Like that's there's a difference between wins and then the whole winning plays. Let's say somebody's lifetime game record. I like it. That out of the 617 on the whole,
I'm winning in life. You should put that on my resume.
Do you think Patriot Nation has a firm 100% chance or 100% sort of feeling, let's say, on what they want to happen?
Patriots Nation.
Yeah, or do you get the sense that fans are much more waiting to see what happens and then react
to
it?
What have we told them that they want? Because I would say,
oh, no, I wanted to tell them that they wanted Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 3, a wide receiver, but I've caved in given the cavalcade.
They broke you down.
Well, given the cavalcade of audio and you know, the organization of the collaboration that they're now rolling out, and everybody is saying the same thing.
We are a part of the collaboration nation.
That's really it. Yep, there you go. Write the bad song. We should. But, yeah, so, no, I've given up. Because I do think that if we did either the informal poll or just threw open the phones and said, okay, who's your guy? I think it'd be much closer to 50-50 on the take the lock, stock, and barrel wide receiver that's going to let me sprout wood regardless who the quarterback is versus the, oh, no, the only way to go is take a quarterback crowd.
Yeah, but it's not going to be a bunch of boos like, you know, the Jets taking Kyle Brady over Warren Sapp.
You don't think the assembled Patriot fans in Detroit, that they would stay quiet if you hear the New England Patriots have made a trade? You don't think there would be all the booing?
No, but there would be because they've been, you know, told for the last, I don't know, 35 days since we've had our little timer up there, our countdown up there,
yep,
they're going to take a quarterback. Kraft has said they're going to take a quarterback. Jerod Mayo has said they're going to take a quarterback.
I did not tell them to take one. I said that's what I would like to see.
Christian, you can't win without them.
That's how you lean on the people without ordering them to do it.
New England Patriots like
that quarterback from Michigan who won the championship.
I learned it from Bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't give
I think after
orders.
All this time, it's going to be just a basic, simple Drake May.
It's really what it just get that. And you know what? I don't want to be disappointed. But even you just saying that, I'm like, yeah, that's what it's going to be.
Womp, womp, womp. Yeah. Poor me. Just another quarterback wearing number 10.
No, and you know
womp,
what?
Womp.
And you know, it'll be great. Oh, it'll be great in August to go to camp and watch him stand around. Oh, I can't wait. I mean, I am like a puppy with two Peters.
Sorry to disappoint you.
I can't wait to go to camp and watch him just kind of stand there and look good. Good grief. Anyway, we'll be at the draft tomorrow. Draft is on Thursday and Friday. God help us with the rain in Cleveland. This is going to be a real interesting 72 hours. And you know what's crazy, Fourier?
Hmm.
I think Chicken Nick is almost rooting for a little bit of chaos.
Why would he
not
do that?
Not even remotely.
Nah,
no, I'm telling you, with us. Not with you back here in the whole.
I want stories out of travel. I don't want.
You want chaos.
I don't want the next 3 days of shows. No one knows what's going on.
Oh, well, that's a given. I mean, come on. It's all on the fly. We don't know what's going on.
I like it that way.
Who's going to walk in that Buffalo Wild Wings? We have no idea. John Jansen might walk
in. You guys are going to call each on one phone line and just talk to each other.
Oh, my God. I've been there with a handheld.
Impossible. That's possible.
Oh, Are You Done brings it home on this Tuesday. Next.
Gresh and Fourier on WEEI. Now, it's time for...
Are you done? Are you done?
Are you done?
Are you done? You done, right? You done, right? Are you done? Are you done?
On Gresh and Fourier.
All right, so tomorrow we will be in Detroit for our draft coverage. Of course, the NFL draft, 2 days, 6 hours, 11 minutes away from the first round starting. We probably should add 20 minutes to that. Because you know they'll still 20 minutes in the first round. Hey, it starts at 8. Ah, congratulations. Here's 7 minutes of whatnot and rumors, and then here's Roger Goodell.
I love it when they say, hey, the Chicago Bears are on the clock, and then those knuckleheads sit, wait, and take the entire amount of time. You're the first pick of the draft. Once you know, just call it in. Call it in.
It's a TV show.
I know, the NFL is probably like, listen, take your time. There's no rush. I would do it anyways. Ah, suck on it.
They just send it in there. They don't have to announce it.
Send it in.
Although you could. I would think that Chicago doesn't need to, you know, they're probably practicing how they want to write Caleb Williams.
Yeah. You know what? Use this
font.
Take this pen.
Yeah.
Try red now.
Exactly.
Okay, now you do it.
They're gonna do the glue thing and then like dump glitter on it.
Yeah,
and then it'll just be
glittery.
Let
it dry though. Let it dry.
Oh yeah, Billy Lanny, are you done?
Dunsky.
Hey. Wow, Chicken Nick, are you done?
I'm not done.
Oh baby, what
so
do we
this
got?
This morning, a car drove through a Dunkin' Donuts. Nobody was hurt.
Oh, Jesus.
In Cranston, Rhode Island.
Oh, my.
Down in Gresh's neck of the woods, in Seekonk, Rhode Island.
Yeah, in Seekonk, Rhode Island.
Their neighboring town.
That's right. Oh,
so
yeah.
Apparently, it was a kid that was on his learner's permit.
They're investigating crooks in Cranston, too.
It was a kid on his learner's permit. He got confused, hit the gas instead of the brake.
Come on.
Drove through the front of the Dunks.
What are you
But doing? This 15-year-old kid's mom works there.
Oh!
He was interviewed for the news, and this is what he had to say after his mom was almost hit by a car.
I was just like, America doesn't just run on Dunkin', cars do too.
He had that thing locked and loaded.
Good for him.
All right, so Fourier,
and the best.
I'm going to guarantee none of you know this. Do you know that this actually happens in the, believe it or not, the NASCAR Xfinity series all the time? So what they've done is the folks at Xfinity have, I do believe.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Ooh, let's go racing today, boys.
So they have given, I do believe, the drivers get like a little monetary bonus for saying something to the equivalent of, well, we weren't as fast as Xfinity 10G internet today, but da-da-da-da-da. They all work it in. It's unbelievable, the product placement.
That's amazing.
Because it's like, remember I told you in UFC, if you wear the stuff to the ring, then you're getting an extra check because you're wearing the stuff that could be sold and all that whatnot.
It's just that is hilarious.
America doesn't just run on Dunkin', cars do too.
It's a great one.
It just reminded me of, so I will say this though, like when I took my my driving test, I did go forward when I was looking back.
Oh, you did?
I did. And the guy still passed me. I was like, I'm sorry, sir. I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous.
Oh, you did the I'm nervous thing?
I'm sorry. Don't make me cry. Don't make me cry.
Oh, my God.
You know, I put it in park after parallel parking. It was the very end of the test, and it crept forward like 2 inches. I was like, oh, he's going to fail me now.
How did Coco get her license with her anxiety level and the fact that there would be, you know, someone in there being like, you do this K-turn now?
You have to be really, really, really bad
to not get your license.
To not get your license.
Yeah.
Like, it's happened. I know. Like, I just remember even my kids freaking out with their driving test. And, like, just, like, thinking that and then talking about it. I was like, no, the guy was listening to your show, Dad, as we were doing the test.
You know what you really want to do is there's the whole, you can give them the driving test. But what we should do every 2 years is force people to have to take the written test over again, or every 5 years, and force people to actually have to, you know, recognize the rules and the laws of the road that they don't. Yeah, of course.
No, so do I. But it is funny, like the way they phrase the question, you will sit there and go, like there's a couple questions about
can
that
I
remember going
5 miles an hour.
No. Am I supposed to pay a toll after 60
after
days?
6 weeks.
Where is that?
How can my car be impounded? Hey, what has to happen for my car
to
my
get
license
inspected 2 weeks after I buy the car?
Oh no!
I'm not even gonna say anything about my new car.
So
I'm still waiting on that.
Are you sure that you might not want to leave your car here in the lot?
I'm great friends with the.
Do you
want to
park it where there's a state police presence where they could be roaming around and being like, "Oh yeah, get this guy out of here."
That's how I got my license suspended. The only time I've ever had it done in my life.
The only time I've had it was
The cop just ran my plates, and then it was like, and I didn't get a ticket speeding in Massachusetts. It was in New York.
Billy, quickly.
Another out-of-state ticket this guy got.
At least four.
If Bubba ends up in a situation where he's on the news and busts out that Duncan line, will that be a proud New England moment, or will Dad yell at him?
Nah, you know what? That's a good question. I'd be like, don't be an idiot.
America doesn't just run on Duncan cars, too.
Like, the kid was practicing that.
That's
like, the kid had to have been practicing that.
He's probably, the owner probably said, listen, your mom's going to have to pay for this unless you give me some advertisement.
Yeah,
unless
probably.
You give me some, if you give me something off the hook, insurance. If not,
he's a free donut kid.
He sounds like he's had his fill of donuts.
Paid in donuts. Say whatever you need to say, kid.
There you go. Could I have crawlers?
Cold cut combo.
Why are the donuts so small now?
Ah, here
they
we go.
Smaller,
isn't it?
Don't get me started.
Here we go.
I'm telling you,
they shrinking.
They made the boxes smaller too. You notice that?
Right before, like when it was a short rectangular box, they would jam them in the.
They would.
Now they're all
I'm
laid
telling
out
you,
perfectly.
They're all muffins. Everything's smaller.
Yeah.
Everything's smaller.
That small box is a very big problem in society right now. And that is it. We are Dunski. We'll see you from Detroit tomorrow. Knock on wood. We think we'll be on for 4 hours. We might only be on for two. But join us at 10. Because, boy, we have a lot to do in previewing the draft. Chicken Nick and Billy producing on the radio side. Zeke on the video end. If something went wrong, blame them. Jones and Mego are next. God willing, we'll talk to you from Detroit tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
America doesn't just run on Duncan. Cars do, too.
Thank you for listening.